This is episode number 24.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendlin and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a show that celebrates the RV lifestyle. Whether you have a small RV like the road trek Jennifer and I travel in, or a big Class A motorhome, or a fifth wheel, a pop-up, heck, even if you dry camp out of your car or tent and are just thinking about getting an RV, this show is for you. We talk about getting out there, enjoying God's creation, meeting interesting people, finding great campsites, exploring the countryside, as well as sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right and using the right gear and technology to enhance our camping and RV experience. That's what Road Trekking, the podcast, is all about, the RV lifestyle. And I want to thank you for putting me in your ear today. This episode of Road Trekking the RV Podcast is brought to you by Van City RV, where they only sell Class B motorhomes. Camping World and the Good Sam Club, good friends, good fun, great savings, join today. And Verizon Wireless, with the nation's largest and most reliable 4G LTE network. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Road Trekking RV Podcast. We've had a great week. I am still in my sticks and bricks home in Michigan, and we have had the coldest weather of the six decades I have lived. I've never recalled weather colder than this. I have a little weather station up on top of the roof of our house. And the other night I woke up and it was minus 25 degrees Fahrenheit. Can you believe that? And we've had really in the last week since we did the last episode, it's been below zero just about every night. And we still have another couple more cold ones coming. We were going to head off to Florida, and I look at Florida and it's the same thing there. Those guys, not below zero, but they're below freezing and in much of Florida. Now that's all supposed to end. Spring is less than a month away, and we're all pretty excited about that. Hey, an update on our friend Kathy Huggins from Living the RV Dream with Kathy and John Huggins. They have been doing a podcast, a web blog. We had them as a guest a couple of episodes ago. And right after that interview, not long after, Kathy Huggins came down with some severe abdominal pain, ended up in the hospital in critical condition. They removed much of her small intestine, and it was really touch and go there for a while. I heard from her husband, John, and he thanked us for mentioning it the other day and asking for prayers, and they still need your prayers. Kathy is now out of intensive care. She's still hospitalized in Alabama, and there's a long road of recovery ahead, but she is out of ICU, and that's good news. So please keep Kathy and John Huggins of Living the RV Dream in your prayers. They're great folks, and we can't wait to see Kathy get recovered here. Well, we have tons of stuff today. It's hard always to wrap around a topic. I always have to come up with a title, you know, for each episode, and we cover so much material. I don't know what it is to talk about, but I think it's going to be pursuing your passions. If I had to come up with a kind of something that will wrap us around what we're going to talk about today, we've got a lot of good reader questions, and I'll take some email questions. A lot of you don't like leaving a voice message, which is, of course, the way we like it, because people get to hear our audience and they get to hear your excitement. We'll take a couple of those, and then we've got some email that I've collected over the last week, and we'll try and answer those. We have an off-the-beaten-path report coming up on a great little park in Florida that I have never visited. And after hearing this report and learning about it, I want to do that. Well, that's coming up. We have a terrific interview with a guy who is not your typical RVer. You know, most RVers are, although this is changing rapidly, most are baby boomers or later. I mean, baby boomers are coming to the RV market like crazy because so many people are reaching that age now. But an increasingly large number of RVers are younger people. And we've met several of them that we've had in interviews over the past few episodes. And today you're going to meet a really cool guy, Mark Rickert. He's a part of our road trekking group on Facebook, and he reads the blog. And he is not your typical RVer. He's in his early 30s. He is a full-timer. He travels around in a Road Trek Class B, and he pursues a passion that he has. And we'll talk about that. And he also earns a living while he's on the road. A lot of people, as you'll hear, and even some of our questions today, how can you go out and do more RVing and still make money? And there's lots of ways to do that. We'll try and talk and give you some clues on that. But stick around. You're going to want to hear Mark's interview coming up in just a little bit later on. So let's get some questions.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
I'm very envious of your situation, being able to make a living out of your recreational vehicle and checking out all these new advances. I would love to be in your situation. I'll be following you. Thanks for all the info.
Well, thank you much. That question came from Kevin. He left that on our leave a voicemail message on the roadtrekking.com blog. Well, Kevin, thank you. It is a great lifestyle. We're not full-timers, although our friends the Huggins and others have said, well, you really are a full-timer because you're on the road at least 2-3 weeks out of every month, pretty much. And I guess we are, and we take long stretches of time, but we keep coming back, touching back to our Michigan Sticks and Brooks home. And I still have some stuff I have to do around here. But there are lots of ways to do this. But as you'll hear, even in our interview coming up with this young guy who's out full-time and you have to make some trade-offs to live this kind of a lifestyle, traveling around. And we'll talk about it. But how can other people do it? Well, there are a lot of different ways to earn a living while you're out traveling. And if you go back and listen to roadtrekking.com/8, roadtrekking.com/8, in that episode, we had an interview with Steve Anderson. And Steve Anderson runs a site called workcampers.com. And Steve is dedicated to helping employers around the country find and hire RV work campers. And as Jim explains, work campers are adventurous individuals, couples or families or single people who have chosen the RV lifestyle, but they still need to earn some money, or they need to find a way to supplement a pension, perhaps, or Social Security. And there are so many ways to do that. I mean, one of the ways is volunteer campground hosts. And there are, and you can find a lot of that information from Steve Anderson's site. I'll put a link to it on the show notes for this episode, roadtrekking.com/24. And you can go back and look at it. But he helps. A lot of people are hiring hosts for campgrounds and in exchange for a free place to stay and sometimes even some money. There's a lot of jobs like that. There are other people. Amazon, for example, hires seasonal workers. And they last for quite a while. They're good paying jobs. You work hard. They put you up in a campground around their one of their centers. They have several around the country and you can work. There are lots of other opportunities for people who need to make some money and still want to be able to travel or live in their RV. So, Kevin, it is a possible dream for anybody, and you will be amazed. A lot of people are learning new skills. I'm a firm believer. I do a lot of talking around the country. I speak at business groups sometimes, and I talk about success and how the internet has made it possible for anybody to make a really good living by being an entrepreneur, a solo entrepreneur, and using the internet and other ways to do it. So don't give up on that dream. You can do it. So appreciate that. And Carl, you can check out the notes or anybody else that's interested in how to be a work camper or earn money while you RV. Just go to the show notes for this episode, which is roadtrekking.com/24. Okay, another question. Let's listen to this one.
Hello, Mike and Jennifer. My name is Carl, and I currently use a half-ton truck to tow a travel trailer. I want to thank you for sharing your Road Trek podcast with the rest of us. I was interested in learning more about the e-technology you highlighted in one of your previous podcasts. Once you have a little bit more experience with that e-technology, I would like to know, first, How long will your fully topped off batteries last under regular use? That is, using the air conditioner, the microwave, the television, and, well, quite frankly, the kind of electronics you use in your RV. Before you have to hook it up to a land source or fire up your engine generator. Second, can that engine generator and the solar panels actually maintain the draw of those kind of things and actually replace the likes of an own-in generator? And lastly, how long do you have to run your engine generator to get those batteries back up to full charge? Thanks again for taking my questions.
Okay, Carl. Well, thank you for sending them in. And you ask about e-technology, and that is the name for some of the innovative technology that Road Trek Motorhomes has built into their Road Trek vans. And I've had probably more experience than anybody else in actually using it. We had the very first e-Trek. We got that in 2012, and we just traded that in, and it was just sold. Our used one was sold a couple of weeks ago. We traded that in December, and now are in a CS Adventurous XL from Road Trek, but it has much of that e-technology as well. So what is e-technology? Well, we did an episode when it was introduced in December at the National RV Show in Louisville, Kentucky, and you can get a hint of that and listen to Jim Hamill, the president of Road Trek Motorhomes, explaining it in the episode number 11, and that would be in the I'll put it in the show notes, but it's roadtrekking.com/11 where we talk about it. But essentially what it is it's a blend of very proprietary and high-tech battery management that Road Trek is now building into its various models, supplemented by some really advanced solar panels that cover much of the roof of the RV. So you ask a couple of questions. The first thing, and I get this all the time, how long will the fully charged house batteries, those are the batteries that run all the stuff inside, not on the engine, but inside the vehicle, how long will all that last on topped off batteries? And, you know, people ask that, but you got to think about the question. I mean, how many batteries do you have? What are you using? How hot is it? How humid is the vehicle if you're using air conditioning? How much you're using the microwave? I mean, I can't give you an exact figure. However, let me try. Normal use for us when we're camping is simply running the lights, the LCD lights. I also charge all my computers. My batteries are always being topped off, you know, on the cell phones, on my computers. We use the microwave and the convection oven to cook, but that's what, a minute or two at the most, maybe three. If we're doing the oven, maybe four or five, but not a lot. And that's the biggest draw, by the way, is a microwave. What about the air conditioning? Well, it seems hard to think anybody needs air conditioning when it's been 25 below zero. But as far as the air conditioning goes, I have run mine at night after the humidity is out of the vehicle, you know, out of the RV. I've run it for 4 or 5 hours, and then I turned it off. Now, I don't know if it would have gone longer. That's the longest I've ever run. I turned it off because it was too cold. It just got too cold. So I can't give you a firm answer. I would think that is at about the tops of it with the batteries that I had in the e-Trek. Now, in terms of boondocking, for example, if you're going out in the middle of nowhere with no commercial power and you want to run, you know, run the vehicle, use the lights and use the, you know, cook with it. It's a convection cooking on the e-Trek model. The one we have now has gas, which I like better. I like gas cooking on propane better. But it would easily last me all weekend. Now, that's not running the air at max, you know, 24/7. It's not going to do that because the air and the microwave are the biggest gobblers of power. So in terms of normal use, I can get a weekend out of it on a fully charged unit. Now, you also ask about solar. How much does solar put in? Well, solar keeps those batteries under normal circumstances. That means not using the air conditioning excessively or not using the convection oven. Under normal circumstances, the solar will help top off those batteries and keep them always charged. Now, that was on the e-Trek I had. Now, the unit I have now and some of the solar technology that are on the modern units that Road Trek is building, like the whole roof of my Road Trek is covered with solar panels. And my friend Camp Skunk, who has a similar model of mine, he's testing his out. I'm also kind of a test pilot for this with ours. Camp Skunk's down in Florida, and he ran his all weekend with everything, and the solar kept the power. He never even lost any power. So the solar really can help a whole lot, particularly if you're in a place that has the sun. It does charge when it's cloudy, but not nearly as efficiently, obviously, as the sun. And then you ask about how long does the engine generator, which is kind of a proprietary thing that Road Trek, how long does that take to top off the batteries? Well, basically a half hour maybe of, you rev it up to 2,500 RPM, your engine, and then leave it there for 2 seconds, and that immediately starts the charging of the batteries, and it charges very fast. It depends, again, on how many batteries you have, all that stuff. But normally, if you're running low and you run the engine for a half hour, you're going to get another day's worth out of it. So those are all general figures, but it's from my experience, and I don't think anybody has used the E-Track more than we have. Jennifer and I have. We put 65,000 miles on ours. So I can't speak highly enough about this. E-Tracknology has now trickle down and is now being part of all of the bills that Road Trek is doing. And, you have to decide how many batteries you want and how many solar panels, all that stuff. It depends on what model you get, but it's pretty cool stuff. Now, yes, I do have a new model, and I have talked about this before, and I really am not going to be able to go into a whole lot of details. We're testing out lithium-ion batteries. Those are not yet available, but lithium-ion batteries are even more efficient, and we'll talk more about it when we can, but that's coming down the pike. I'm guessing probably not for a year, maybe a little earlier. There might be some that are being ordered and built, but that's the next evolution in batteries. So I hope that helped. Now, let me go to some email questions, if I can, and we'll just kind of go. This comes from Craig in North Carolina. He says, just read your recent note about how bad the weather is for RVing. My son and his wife just came up from Mexico to British Columbia in their RV in the last 2 weeks, and the weather was excellent. Well, I'm glad it was somewhere there, Craig. He says, FYI, his most concerning incident was not in Mexico, but in Oregon. He said they went to sleep one night in a Home Depot parking lot, and to make a long story short, they ended up surrounded by 3 police cars. Town ordinances against RVing overnight. 3 police cars. Okay. Our RV Road Trek trip to Mexico last year was similar. The incident for us, though, was in a California state RV park. I was approached by a young man wrapped with chains with a big stick who alleged that I was from another planet. He asked me to take off my sunglasses so he could see the whites of my eyes. I fortunately passed that test, but was subjected to a lecture on the environment. Well, those things, I guess, happen. And, the reason there were 3 cars probably around that RV thing is it's a very small town. They don't have much to do. Hey, we've got an RV in Walmart. Let's get them. Or there's another problem with RVs. And I see this all the time in the news. People using RVs as floating meth labs. So that might have been the reason. That's my reason there are 3 cars, because you don't know what you're going to get into. So don't blast the cops too much. There might have been a reason. It's a shame that some cities prohibit overnight parking. We've talked about that before. That's a plot from the campground owners who resent it, that people would get a free night at Walmart, even though Walmart welcomes them. So it's an attempt to force you to stay and spend $40, $30 to stay in a campground for a few hours. Don't get me going on that one. All right, a couple other questions. Bruce and Grace write, Mike, I enjoyed your article on the park model camping. That's exactly what we do and have been doing for several years. We have a park model RV in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, and a park model RV in Surprise, Arizona. We have a 2008 Road Trek Adventurous RS. We travel back and forth in it, attending rallies, trips to state parks and campgrounds, camping with grandkids, and we love it. This lifestyle is a very excellent way for one to spend their retirement years. We keep a car at both our summer and winter locations, but the yearly combined mileage of both cars doesn't come close to what we put on the Road Trek. I wonder how many other retirees are enjoying their lifestyle. It's growing in popularity. It is, very much so. Park models are like miniature mobile homes, and now they're in RV parks, and they may be 900 square feet, maybe 1,000. Some of them are a little bigger, usually 1 bedroom, sometimes 2, sometimes 1 bath, sometimes a bath and a half. And you can pick them up for, from probably $30,000 to $100,000. And you buy the lot or you lease the lot. I'll tell you, if you want to learn more about park camping, go to roadtrekking.com. I'll put a link, roadtrekking.com. Look under the show notes. I'll put a link to a story that our road trekking reporter, J.G. Van, just did on this. And you can see his park model and learn how a little bit more about it. It's a pretty viable way to have a place, a summer place and a winter place, and then you can RV in your road trek. Very popular way to move around the country now. One last email, and this comes from Barack. He says, hey, Mike, great blog and podcast. Quick question. Would you have any recommendations for test driving the RV lifestyle? I'm 52 and about 4 years away from retiring and would like to explore that way of living. Thanks and safe travels. Well, Barack, thank you. Good luck. Test drive is a great idea. That means go out and find one, spend a week in it or a few days or whatever you can do. As far as Class Bs, they're very hard to find because there's so much in demand. So call around, look at various Class B dealers, ask them if they rent. Most of them are spoken to months in advance, and I warn you that the cost is expensive, very expensive. But check it out if you can do it. That is a great way. If it's a Class C, you're a little bit luckier because there's a big operation that's called Cruise America. And they rent Class Cs all over the place. You see them all. I see them every time I'm out at one of the national parks. So you could try a Class C, which is a little bit bigger than a B and a little more cumbersome to drive. But that's a good way to test them out. As far as test diving a Class A, that's a little harder, although it's also possible. And your best source for that is to check some dealers. All right. Those are the questions. We got lots more. Sorry we didn't get to yours if you left us one, but we'll keep it in the queue and we'll do our best to answer them. I'll tell you, the questions that we like to answer the most, though, are the ones you leave us with your own voice by using the leave voicemail.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question. Leave a comment. Look on the right side of Mike's RoadTrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
Sponsoring this part of the Road Trekking RV Podcast is Van City RV, serving RV shoppers from the center of the country in St. Louis, Missouri. Van City RV is one of America's top dealers. They specialize only in Class B motorhomes from the three major small motorhome manufacturers. They're in stock, they're on display, and Van City RV loves to deal. They only sell Class Bs. The owner, Ray Dwyer, is considered to be the dean of Class B sales. Nobody knows small motorhomes better. Ray is an enthusiastic booster of small motorhomes. He loves the lifestyle. And Ray and his crew love to show you all they have. They not only stock new models, they have a large inventory of used Class Bs as well. They have a great fly and drive program where you can make your deal over the phone and then fly into the U.S. They'll pay your way there, you into St. Louis. They'll pick you up at the airport and take you to Van City RV to pick up your new unit, which you can drive off and head home in. Now, I've been there. I've seen Van City RV's work. They've worked on our road trek, met Danny and the crew, and I can attest to their skill and their expertise. Here's Danny with this week's special.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, we got a 2007 Road Trek 210 Versatile with an upgraded in-dash radio, navigation system, backup camera, upgraded TV system in the rear. 55,000 miles on this unit. We're asking $55,000 out the door. We're also looking to buy some good used camper vans, road treks, pleasureways, leisure travels. You can give us a call on those at 1-800-467-3905 or check us out at vancityrv.com.
News. Mike's got news. RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle. Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Well, we've got a couple of stories that are related, and I think they point out a really serious issue that you need to know about, and it has to do with the danger of propane and fires. The first one came from Oakland, California, and happened just the other day. A 63-year-old man suffered severe burns when he was driving a motorhome. And it just suddenly erupted into flames on a highway not too far from Oakland, California. Authorities said that the driver, and they didn't release his name, suffered burns over 80% of his body. And in fact, he was on fire when they pulled him out of the inferno. Three good Samaritans pulled over and they dragged him to safety. They put out the flames. And police said that they stayed by his side until authorities arrived. And one of the men had his sweater burned. Another was covered with soot. They weren't hurt, but they said they literally risked their lives to save this guy. And the driver was the only person. It was a 36-foot Class A motorhome. It burst into flames about a little after noon in the northbound lanes of Hagenberger Road in near Oakland. And the fire ended up brought on. They took 18 firefighters. Now, they don't know exactly what caused it, but they said the problem was the propane tanks inside the vehicle kept exploding. And it gutted the motorhome. Damage estimated at about $30,000, and a driver taken to an Oakland hospital and transferred to a severe burn center in San Francisco. I don't have an update on his condition, but that was a pretty serious one. And the other one, a very similar story. This one happened in a little different cause. This one happened in Oklahoma near Rogers County, Oklahoma. And again, good Samaritans ended up pulling a woman from a burning RV on the Will Rogers Turnpike there in Oklahoma. Oklahoma Highway Patrol said this RV was driving, it was snowing, and it ran into the back of a semi that had pulled out in front of it. And then it, in turn, was hit by a pickup, and it exploded and started to burn. And when they got there, there were a number of people who found this woman, and it was burning bad. They pulled her out of the car, 58-year-old woman from Ohio. She was taken to a Tulsa hospital in critical condition. She had all sorts of injuries, head, arm, leg, and trunk. So what we know about this is these kind of accidents is I see them literally all the time. And I have a little alert that comes by them every time there's an accident. And so many of them involve burning motorhomes, and it's the propane that catches on fire. Now, we had a big discussion about this in our Road Trekking Facebook group the other day. And here's the issue. So many people, and I don't know what happened in these two cases, although we know that propane was a factor in the burning, but we don't know whether the propane was on or not. But many people routinely leave their propane on while they're driving. And that is not what any RV manufacturer recommends. On our group, we had a big discussion. If you're not a member, by the way, of the Road Trekking Facebook group, you should be. We've got 3,700 members on there and asking questions and helping people with information. You have to join, and then I have to approve you so we can keep the spammers out. But by all means, come join our community. I'll put a link on our show notes here at roadtrekking.com/24. But on our Facebook group, Rick Ornberg, who has had a lot of experience as a firefighter, here's what he said, and I like what he said. He says, propane, unlike gasoline, can expand several hundred times as it changes from liquid to gas. And he says, think, and this is what firefighters like, think BLEVE for boiling liquid expanding vapor explosion. And what that is it creates a tremendous mushroom cloud when it blows. And Rick says in his 26 years experience fighting vehicle fires and propane fed fires, among others, he said he would gladly opt for the gasoline fires. That everybody's free to do what they want, but keep it shut off except when you're stationary, and keep it shut off also when you're at a gas station. Now, a lot of people do this routinely. They run the refrigerator on propane as they're driving. Don't do that. You can run it off 12 volts. You can run it off your inverter, an AC. Don't run it off propane. And I'm just passing that along. You do what you want, but the experts say do not run your propane while it's moving. This part of the podcast sponsored by Good Sam and Camping World. And Camping World, you know, the most trusted name in RV sales, equipment, and accessories. They are making sure you want to know about the Camping World mobile app. This is an all-in-one app. It provides quick and easy access to shop thousands of RV camping and outdoor products. You can do it right from the app. You can also find RVs that are for sale. It'll direct you to the nearest Camping World Supercenter or any of their 100-plus stores nationwide. You can get directions right from the app on how to get there to find what you need from Camping World. And while you're shopping, you can get detailed product information and customer reviews. It's a great app, the Camping World app. Just search for it in the Google Play Store or the iTunes App Store, the Camping World app. And you'll be delighted to have that.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV tech tip of the week.
Well, this is a pretty cool little product, and I'm actually going to install it at my house and test it out and let you know how it all works. But by the way, this part of the podcast brought to you by Verizon Wireless, the nation's largest, most reliable 4G LTE network. And Verizon Wireless is the exclusive provider of all my online connectivity as we traveled around the country in our road trek. But have you ever wondered about the temperature in your house and worried about it? Well, this is a really cool gizmo. It's called the Nest Home Thermostat. I'll put a link on the website to it, but the Nest Home, all one word, N-E-S-T-H-O-M-E, the Nest Home Thermostat is a, you install it. It's very easy to install. It actually is like a smart thermostat. And you can just, if you got a normal 24-volt heating and cooling system, you just take the old thermostat off, put this thing in. And then it hooks up with your, it's got built-in Wi-Fi connectivity. So it hooks up with your iOS, your Apple or your Android operating system, so that when you're away from home, it's operating on Wi-Fi through your home Wi-Fi system, and you can zap right into it. And then you can use this thermostat to adjust the temperature. You can make sure that you're avoiding unnecessary heating or cooling if you're on the road. It senses when your home is empty. In other words, you're not nearby with your mobile device. And so it will then maybe back off the heat or back off the air conditioning, so you're saving money. It is compatible with almost all the home heating and cooling systems you'll find out there. Very simple to install, very easy to use. And it has a number of really great energy-saving features. It allows you to stay on top of energy usage to reduce your monthly energy bill. And as you get through this thing for a while, within a week or so after you set it up, it then kind of, it's smart. It learns your personal schedule, and then it will program itself to adjust to the temperatures you like. You know, maybe you like a little cooler at night when you're home. Maybe you like to have it warm up when you get up around 6 or 7 in the morning or whatever time. And you can control the temperature of your home from your smartphone or your tablet or your laptop. I know a lot of people, like particularly some people in Arizona, a lot of people keep their air conditioning on because you don't want it to get too hot, but they limit it to like 85 or 90. And you can do that from this thing. You can always zap in with your smartphone, see how hot it is or how cool it is at your home. If it's really cold, you're out away from home, you're worried about pipes breaking, you can see your home temperature, and then you can call somebody to come in and take care of it. It's a really great gizmo for RVers. It's called the Nest Home Thermostat. And if you want to see it and learn more, just go to your local Verizon retailer. They're all over the country. All the Verizon retailers will tell you about it. They'll show you how to use it. You will be able to pick it up right there. And you're in great shape. And if you want more stories about how to use technology to enhance and improve your life, go to roadtrekking.com/VZW, roadtrekking.com/VZW for stories on how tech can improve your life.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path, a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
Hey, Mike. This is Victor and Lisa down here in Gainesville, Florida. We're off the beaten path on a hard surface biking trail between Gainesville and Hawthorne. It's about 16 miles one way. It's a beautiful trail. It's well worth taking the time to ride with your bikes. We're here, of course, with our Burley wagon, and our dog is inside. Her name is Daisy May, and we're staying at Payne's Prairie State Park, and are agile, having a wonderful time, and wanted to let you know all about it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Victor. Victor gets a free road trekking hat for sending in that off the beaten path report. Victor actually did that by shooting a video on his smartphone and then just emailing that to me. And it was a neat shot of this bike run. It's the Gainesville to Hawthorne, Florida bike trail, 16 miles one direction. Beautiful. It's paved. And he was staying and really had high marks for Payne's Prairie Preserve State Park in Florida. And we will put a link to all of that stuff on the site. If you have an off-the-beaten-path report, can be about a neat place you're staying, or it can be even something like you've came across on a back highway, a great restaurant or a museum or something that's worth stopping and seeing and taking a photo of, we love to get them. So use the leave voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com website. Send us that, and we will be delighted to, if we use it in a podcast, we'll send you a free road trekking hat.
You're listening to Road Trekking, the podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. From the blog, just click the send voicemail button. That's at roadtrekking.com. The small motorhome RV travel blog. Travel blog.
Yeah. All right, now it's time for our special interview of the week, and this is a really fun interview. It's with a really cool guy. His name is Mark Rickert, and Mark's in his early 30s, and he travels around the country pursuing his favorite hobby, his passion, in fact, for it. You know what it is? Skydiving. Jumping out of an airplane. And he loves it. He's done 250 jumps this past year, visited 11 states, and he's full-time living in his RV while he also earns a living on the internet. Now, Mark left a six-figure-a-year job for this lifestyle, and he's got some great hints and great tips for us, and it's time now for you to meet Mark Rickert. Well, Mark joins us right now, and we're going to talk lifestyle, we're going to talk full-time in, and we're going to talk earning your living on the road. Mark Rickert, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you having me here.
Oh, it's great. It's great to be here. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about you are a full-time RVer. Is that correct?
Yep.
Tell us what you have and how you do
it. Full-time since, it's a Road Trek 190 Popular. It's 1998.
So it's 98. So you're, 15, 16 years old in that road trek. And how long have you been doing this? And how did this happen? You had a pretty good business as a tech guy online developing. And how did this all happen?
Yeah, well, I started skydiving, and I noticed that there was RVs all over the drop zone. And I was like, I kind of inquired about it, and I noticed that people lived there on the weekends. And I'm like, wow. And I never really thought about living in an RV until that point. And I'm like, wow, like, do all drop zones have RV parks? And it turns out most of them do, actually. And that's what kind of got my brain into the mode of, well, maybe I could live in an RV and just travel a bunch.
Now, you are a skydiver, which is kind of an unusual passion and hobby, but many of us pursue hobbies, be it photography or scuba diving or hiking, all sorts of things like that. But let me talk a little bit about skydiving. How many jumps have you done?
In the past year, I've done about 250.
That means you're almost every day.
Yeah. I'm a little disappointed in myself if I don't get in six or seven at least in a weekend.
So do you, and you go all over the country? Tell us about where you skydive and what a drop zone is.
Yeah, so a drop zone is basically an airport with skydiving operations on it. It can be municipal, it could be a private airstrip, or even like a county airport. And then the drop zone owners will lease a hangar or and airplanes and things like that and run their business of dropping people out of the sky.
And how many states have you done
usually
this?
Usually have certain requirements. States. I've been skydiving in about 11 states now since August.
That's pretty amazing. Now, so that is obviously your passion. As we talk today, it is early. It's mid February, actually. A spring is sometimes coming. Where are you now?
Right now, I'm in New Orleans. I have a couple friends that live here, and I came down for the Mardi Gras festivities.
And living in your road truck, living in a van, as the old song goes, how has that worked out for you?
It's been great. There's some challenges, but nothing I can't overcome. I've always been a bit of a minimalist in my lifestyle, and had a gigantic apartment before for a really long time without any couches or anything like that until a girlfriend at the time made me get some couches. So I guess I've always been a bit of a minimalist. And when I started reading into this lifestyle, fit me perfectly. I have a certain number of clothes that in my little bureau here. And when I get a new T-shirt, I put a T-shirt in the bin or donate it or something like that. So I've got systems where I keep my life as minimal as I can.
There's some lessons there that everyone who travels in a small motor home or a small RV or even the big ones, they can also learn from all of this. So let's talk about that minimalist lifestyle. You only have so much room in your refrigerator. You have only so much room in the storage compartment. How much clothes do you need?
I don't need a whole lot. Honestly, I just have some T-shirts, some jeans, and some shorts. A couple of nice button-up shirts, and the unmentionables, and that's really about it. I don't have too many things in my life, and it's great going to a bunch of different skydiving events. You get an event T-shirt for free with the registration. So now I've got to figure out what T-shirt to get rid of when I go to a new event.
So you're going to overflow those drawers. Now, the big question that many people have is I'm sure they're listening and they're thinking about what they like to do. Maybe it's antiquing. Maybe it's checking out flea markets or fishing or hunting or photography, as we've said before. But the big problem for so many is earning an income on the road. Now, you happen to be a tech guy, but you've obviously met some other people who are doing the same thing. Talk about working on the road while you full time.
Yeah, so I have my entire van is wired up for internet. I've got a wireless hotspot in my van so I can get internet on all my different devices and things like that. The biggest part for me is being comfortable in a small RV when I'm working. I can turn my captain's passenger seat and work there or work on my bed, but don't really have an office space per se, which is, I think, the biggest challenge for me working on the road is the consistency of where I'm at.
I have the same thing, although I have to do podcasts and a network TV reports while I'm on the road. But,
yeah.
You learn to pack light and to kind of – I got a little corner in the back that works good for me. But now, are you traveling alone? You mentioned a girlfriend before, so that kind of cramps your style if you're always on the road.
It does. Now, I do travel alone, no girlfriend anymore. But,
smart girl, huh? This guy, let's see, this guy Juan jumps out of airplanes every day, not with a parachute. Not a good idea. No, I'm kidding you, of course. But so that makes it a little bit difficult. Could you do this with more people in a vehicle?
I think two is max for a Class B, and you have to like each other.
Yeah, that's one thing that we've learned real quick. Yeah, if you don't, you'll soon find out. Mark, I'm looking at a picture of you. Looks like just before you deploy the chute as you're jumping out of an airplane, you must obviously do a lot of other things as well. Photography as a hobby?
Yeah, most of it is, as you can imagine, sports action photography.
You wear a GoPro camera?
Yeah, I've got a GoPro that I have mounted to my skydiving helmet, and I love jumping with groups of people and capturing all their maneuvers and things like that in skydives. But I don't do a whole lot of photography outside of that, other than my iPhone photography, taking pictures of neat things I see along the road and sunsets that I see. The Arizona sunsets were so beautiful when I was out there.
Give us a rough idea of your itinerary. Where are you going? You're in New Orleans now. Where are you heading next?
to make the northeast rounds of the drop zones and then kind of head across west on the upper part of the United States, visit my brother in Chicago, and then hit Montana. There's a big skydiving event out in the middle of nowhere in Montana. And then maybe go up into Canada. I'm not sure. I try not to plan too far ahead, just because putting things in stone is not kind of the lifestyle I want to live. But I'll make exceptions for big events. I'll be going to Burning Man this year at the end of in September. So that is one big thing on my itinerary coming up this year.
It's also a very big RV event.
Yeah, it is. I have a friend who I actually met through through the Road Trekking Facebook group, Zach Owenby, who's Ben, and he talks about it a lot on the Facebook group. And so I'm definitely going to get to get actually met in person. We met through the Facebook group, and then I was out in Arizona where he lives, and he came out to the drop zone and did a skydive with me.
That's pretty good. Mark, let's talk about working on the road and the challenges that you face. You mentioned space, internet connectivity. You've got your RV all wired for it. But how easy is it in terms of making a living versus back when you had an apartment and you were in a permanent location?
Yeah, well, it's a lot easier to keep some of my money because I don't have rent or anything like that. Do I just boondock on public land and make sure I've got cell phone signal, and I don't really have hardly any expenses with the road trek. But I guess being focused is one of the difficult problems too. It's very freeing to go out and be able to go wherever I want to go and do whatever I want to do. But when it comes down to it, I have to make a living, and so I have to make time for that. And sometimes it's really easy to get carried away with traveling and, oh, I want to go see this national park or I want to go see this monument or something like that. And I just get carried away and lose track of time. And by the end of the week, I'm scrambling to put in hours for my clients.
Tell us exactly what you do when you're on the road for a living.
Yeah. So I'm a software consultant. I write iPhone apps for clients, and I also have my own iPhone apps that I write that are in the App Store.
And you're able to do that from the road. Now it's time for you to give some advice. One of the things that we love to do, especially when we talk to full-timers and we talk to people who are working and are full-timers, advice for people who are thinking, man, I'd like to do that. I would like to give that a try. What's the first thing you would tell somebody before they embark on such an opportunity?
I think you're search about the type of RVing you want to do. For me, it's the RV is more of a means to get to the next place to live the lifestyle I want, versus like traveling and staying in one place for a long time. And so I do a lot of driving, and so make sure you do your research on what sorts of vehicles are available to you, and also start looking at numbers, because I know there's a couple RV bloggers out there who've posted the like sample budgets for different types of RVing, like on a budget or extravagant RVing, and so make sure you know how much it's going to cost you to live every month versus what you're doing now, because that could be a major determining factor as to whether you want to actually go full time and be in an RV.
Give us as much as you're willing to share about your budget and how it works out for you.
Well, obviously my biggest expenditure is fuel. I get water wherever I can, and propane I fill up about once a month for my heater and my refrigerator. And that only costs like $20. And so like $20 a month for propane is a really great deal. But yeah, gas is my biggest variable expense. And then I've got things like health insurance, auto insurance, and man, did I have a heck of a time finding good full-timers auto insurance. Because I don't own a home and I don't own another vehicle to get me around, and because I'm not of retirement age, I was turned down by almost every single company out there for full-time RV insurance.
Really?
Yeah. So, yep. And I was specifically given the reason only 33 years old, and I wasn't retired. That was why they wouldn't give me full-timer's insurance.
So you did eventually find it, right?
I did eventually find insurance for the RV, but it's a little more expensive than I'd like, and that's why I kept looking and looking and looking, and I just couldn't find anything else.
So your utilities, in effect, are $20 a month for propane, and then, of course, the fuel. That's been nice. But what you mentioned you boondock a lot. Give us an idea of your camping fees, and I don't know if you've chronicled those monthly or yearly, but how does that break down?
Yeah, so I have in the past 6 months, I've stayed in two RV parks for a total of about 5 nights. I feel like I've got a place to sleep, so I shouldn't have to pay for a place to sleep. I'll use the website freecampsites.net, and I go and I find on public land, BLM land, U.S. Forest Service land, all those great places, and I'll just go and I'll spend a day there or a night there on my travels. But because, like I said before, drop zones are really friendly to people living there in RVs or even in tents. So a lot of times I'll just drive up to a drop zone, park my car or park my road trek in the parking lot, and I'll stay there for a week, and nobody cares. So I don't have a whole lot of expenses as far as campgrounds go.
How do you handle meals? Do you prepare your own meals? Do you eat out?
I think I eat out a little bit more often than I'd like, but I do prepare meals. A lot of it is boxed things or soup or microwavable things, just because of the limited space in the refrigerator. It's difficult to keep.
I should point out we're
fruits and stuff.
I should point out we're talking by Skype, and every now and then you kind of cut out, but I think our listeners will be able to figure that out. There's only a couple second drop, but everybody else, if you're down there in New Orleans near Mardi Gras time, you probably got a lot of competition for bandwidth at this time. So,
yeah, this town gets pretty crazy the week leading up to Mardi Gras.
So now you've shared a little bit about budgeting and the economy, the economics of full timing. What are some of the other things that folks who would like to follow your lifestyle need to take into consideration besides the vehicle, how they're going to use it, and the cost of it?
I think one big thing is like where do you want to go and what do you want to see? Before I started out on this adventure, I really never had a bucket list. Like I never thought about, oh, I'd really like to go see the Arches National Monument, or I'd like to go drive the Pacific Coast Highway. As I started getting into the mindset of being in an RV and understanding, wow, I really can go wherever I wanted, I actually started a bucket list of places I want to go and things I want to see in the United States, whereas before I never had that. I guess maybe just because I never really had the whole dream of living in an RV until recently, but I would advise anybody to thinking about living in an RV to start that bucket list and kind of make a physical list of where you want to go and things you want to do so that once you do achieve that goal, you're not just like aimlessly driving around the country.
Did you ever have an aha moment out there as you worked your way through this full-time RVing and working on the road when you realized, I got this figured out? And if so, tell us a little bit about that, when that came to you.
Well, I don't think anybody has it all figured out. There was a point about a month or two into this full timing adventure that I've been on where I told somebody that I lived in the van over there and I was just traveling around skydiving all over the country, and they looked at me and they said, "Wow, do you realize how lucky you are that you can do that?" And I think that was my aha moment, and I really do understand how lucky I am that I've got a career where I can work from the road, and I've got a passion that allows me to travel the country and not only participate in the sport I love, but also to see the country and go to places that I never would have gone before.
Any advice of warning that you would give people based on your experiences and the many different places that you have stayed?
Based on my experiences, yeah, make sure that you have a good of podcasts or audiobooks or something to keep you entertained, because sometimes long stretches of road can be extremely boring. I've come to have like probably 15 or 16 different podcasts that I download now, just to keep my mind engaged while I'm driving, and so that I don't get distracted from the task at hand, and stay kind of alert as possible. I try not to drive too much. I follow your rule where you stop driving at, what is it?
330.
Yeah.
330 rule. Yeah. 200, you drive no more than 330 miles, or you stop at 330. And that way you're not too tired and you still have time to look around, get set up before dark, and enjoy the area. That's great. I'm glad somebody's following. I'm having trouble following it at times. I get too compulsive out there, but it really is a good rule.
I follow it except when I've got like a set destination in mind. Like if I'm just driving and I've got a couple days to, I'll follow that rule. And it's really great. And I've been following it since pretty much I started out. But if I've got a specific event I'm trying to get to or some friends are expecting me, I'll break the rule every once in a while.
Are you finding other people out there who are doing the same thing? Some of the more interesting people that you've met?
Well, because I mostly stick to boondocking remote primitive areas and also to airports, I don't meet a whole lot of other full-time RVers except for people in the skydiving industry. A lot of times parachute packers or tandem instructors will live full-time in their RV on the drop zone. But they don't usually travel. They just stay in one spot and because they always work at the same place.
Well, Mark is very active in our Road Trekking Facebook group. We'll put a link up to that if you've never been there, and you can check it out and talk to Mark there. And Mark, I'm going to have you send us some photos, and we'll put some photos with the show notes episode of this showing you in operation. We need a picture of you and your road trek and a couple of skydiving photos.
Yeah, definitely. I'll get those to you.
Now, you're 33. Last question. How long do you see yourself doing this?
Well, I get that question a lot just because people can't believe that I'm doing it and I'm only 33. And what I usually tell them is something to the effect of, I don't really know how long I'm going to do this. I might do it for the rest of my life and I might decide to stop doing it next year, but I'm going to keep doing it as long as I'm having a good time and as long as things are working for me. And once I'm not enjoying it anymore and once things don't work for me anymore, then it's time to change something.
That's a great piece of advice for all of us in no matter what we do in life. Mark Rickett, you've been a delight of a guest, and I can't wait to run into you out there sometime. And maybe you can get me to jump out of an airplane. That's one thing I've always kind of wanted to do, so I'm ready.
You should do it. It's a great rush.
I'm ready to do it. Hey, thanks for being our guest on the podcast.
Thank you.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
Well, so ends another episode of Road Trekking the RV Podcast. Thanks to Van City RV, Camping World and Good Sam Club, and Verizon Wireless for sponsoring us and making it possible for you to get this podcast absolutely free. Remember, if you would like to have your voice heard and be a part of our podcast, you can record a voicemail message by just clicking the right-hand button on the roadtrekking.com website. Just do that, and we would love to make you a part of this podcast. We use voice messages all the time in every episode. You heard us talking a lot today about our Facebook group, and we urge you to be a part of that. That we have an active group there. Talk about active. Holy cow, there's stuff posted about every 2 minutes about RVing and the small motorhome lifestyle and camping and tips. And if you're not a part of that, just go to look it up, Road Trekking the Group on Facebook, and you have to join, and I have to approve you, but I will do so, and we would love to have you be a part of our conversations there as we welcome you to keep listening to the podcast. I ask you to subscribe. If you're on Twitter, you can follow me at Road Trekking. I would really like you to do us a favor, and on iTunes, give us a review or a rating. If you do that, there's some instructions in the bottom of the show notes page here, roadtrekking.com/24, and it'll tell you how you can do that. Here's one that came in last week. Hey, Mike, this is from Maureen Tweedley from British Columbia, Canada. She says, I'm back, Mike and Jennifer. I haven't missed one of your podcasts. I appreciate all the information that you both provide. I receive your podcast on iTunes, and I know that I can go back anytime and revisit all of the invaluable information shared by you and your guests. Roadtrekking.20/23, the episode we had last week about traveling with kids, she says, is definitely one I'm forwarding to my kids who have a travel trailer and two children, and although they're already sharing wonderful times camping, I'm sure they'll want to hear this one. From Maureen in British Columbia. Thank you, Maureen, for leaving us a review and a rating, and we read every single one of them. They're a great deal of encouragement to us, and I thank you guys, all of you who have done it so far, and invite the rest of you, if you would, do the same thing. It really helps us get this show noticed. We have another episode coming up next Wednesday. We're getting into March. It's got to start getting warm throughout the rest of the country soon, right? And you know what comes in March? Spring. It is on its way. Hey, till next week, thanks for putting me in your ear.